Thanks, Tommy. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Rick Huster with NCBA. I'd first just like to thank BIF and Dr. Perkins for allowing me to come up here and share some consumer insights with you. And I will start by just saying that a lot of the things that Megan talked about, we've done a lot of similar research. It's always nice when the findings align, and we've seen a lot of the same things you have. Here's what I want to share with you today. One, I want to just give you a sense of how we at NCBA strategically look at being good stewards of checkoff dollars and how we go about making sure that we're being as efficient as we can. I'll give you a little bit of data. We do obviously a lot of market research into what consumers think about your product, and then give you some insights into what they think about the industry in general and production and some of the things that we've learned there. I will share a little bit of insight that we've gained on meat substitutes. Obviously, that's a big topic these days, and we felt that necessarily we absolutely had to have a good handle on, you know, how large that market is, what consumers think of it, that type of thing. And then again, if the videos that I brought, if the volume cooperates, you can certainly watch them. I'm not sure if the volume is going to be loud enough to really hear all that well, but we'll see. Okay, the first thing I want to do is just talk to you about how we're really taking a look at the market. Through a lot of market research, obviously, we identify where are those things that, one, we can either leverage as positives or that we need to be paying attention to as potential challenges for the industry. First and foremost, it's the people. It's all of you. It's producers. We want to make sure that that is something that we understand how consumers think about that, and we're able to take action, develop promotions, messages, et cetera, to really drive home the positives around beef production. Protein, we really see that nutritional benefit is something that can be leveraged. You know, we absolutely know that beef can be a part of a very healthy diet, but we do a lot of work, focus groups, quantitative work with consumers to really understand what's the nuance about if they potentially are buying into myths about beef's nutritional value. How do we message to them in a way that helps them understand that it's very healthy? And then lastly, the thing that we leverage most of all is the sheer pleasure, the taste of beef. Consumers love beef. We all know that, but they really, really love beef, and we want to make sure that we don't ever let them forget how great beef is. And we do that by maintaining focus on those three through the Beef It's What's for Dinner brand. We relaunched that brand a little over a year ago, and really that's kind of the pillar that we look at, and we're always striving to make sure consumers believe that beef is the number one protein. So how do we target? You know, we look at all consumers, obviously. We want to understand what all consumers think, but we do break them down into different areas, and we do target. I mean, we say of all the consumers, where should we be putting a lot of our effort? And right now that's against older millennial parents. Millennials, as you know, is one of the largest cohorts, 90-some million of them. The older millennial parents are having kids, obviously. So we want to make sure that what we're doing with checkoff dollars resonates with those folks in particular. But we also talk to a broader target, 20 to 44-year-olds, all consumers. And then we really spend a lot of time working with influencers, dietitians, MDs, retailers, food service operators, and making sure that they understand the benefits and why they should be promoting, selling, et cetera, beef, so that they're reaching all their constituents, whether it's customers, clients, et cetera. So a lot of web visits, the Beef It's What for Dinner website, if you haven't been there recently, it's been redesigned. We consolidated a number of websites into this one site, did a lot of research to understand that this is what consumers were looking for, this is the kind of information they wanted, and it's really had a big impact, 15-plus million website visits to this site. And this is one of the things we did when we relaunched the brand. The first thing we said was, let's reintroduce, if you will, producers to consumers. Not everybody lives, obviously, not everybody works on a ranch or farm, and not very many people live close enough to be that familiar. So we developed this video, and I'll start playing it. If the volume doesn't cooperate, you know, we can move on. But it was a piece that we did that really wanted to show You know, you've talked a lot about technology. That's one of the big reasons everybody's here this week, technology in the beef industry. And really wanted to show consumers that, one, we're very responsible when it comes to animal welfare and the use of hormones and antibiotics, but, you know, we're also very modern and using drones and cloning and those kinds of things to really take this industry to the next level. I'm going to give this a shot. If it doesn't sound, doesn't come through, we...
Can I suggest putting your microphone on the...
Old MacDonald has farms and ranches. On that ranch, she has a cow. Well, 247 cows, but who's counting? That guy is. And on that ranch, he gathers real-time data about his cattle.
So that piece, we obviously did a lot of testing to make sure that we were hitting all the right hot buttons, if you will, that consumers really wanted to know about the cattle industry and, you know, how do they do this and why do they do that? And it's really resonated very positively. It's, you know, it's out on Beef It's What's For Dinner website. It's all over, you know, it's out on social media, different places that you can go. And then this is a more recent campaign. It's called Nicely Done Beef. And obviously I'm not, you won't be able to read all these, but a lot of the other work that we did, it's like, you know, don't, one of the messages was don't take yourself so seriously. You know, you can be a little tongue-in-cheek, and especially among millennials, it's, you know, it's good to do something that can kind of make you smile, but also has a message and allows you to really get something out of it. For example, Nicely Done Beef, you fill farms, ranches, and kitchens with pride. You've got your own nutritionist. How fancy. You've proven that meat substitutes are just that, substitutes. So we focus on the people, pleasure, and protein messages and came up with a number of these, and they're always on, and that's a term that means they are out there in social media, online, kind of constantly, and folks are seeing them. You know, when you go out and you're looking at a YouTube and you get those little clips you need to watch before you get into it. Here are a couple that are, you know, really talking about, not directly, but somewhat the meat substitutes thing that's going on. Nicely Done Beef, you were paleo before it was cool. You build strong muscles. No protein shaker required. You've proven that meat substitutes, and we just saw this one, are just that, substitutes. So let me give you a little bit of background on what consumers think about the product itself. We do something called the Beef Consumer Beef Tracker. We talk to 500 consumers every month on a continuous online survey. So we're constantly getting data. We ask a lot of questions, and we do it continuously so it kind of smooths out any seasonality you might have if you, for example, just did a giant study in January or June. And one of the things we do before I get to that, the beef consumption, I did want to touch on this. You know, you can see that back in those years when we were really suffering through the droughts and the supply kind of got pretty small, relatively speaking, and beef supply shrunk. Well, that's starting to come back, and it's growing in the past 5 years or so. That's grown 8% or so, and it's per capita consumption. That's what you're looking at, is back up to about 58 pounds per capita. And it's important also to understand that when we talk about demand, demand is more than consumption. It's consumption at what price? It's price and volume. So what we're trying to do is really add that value element to it so consumers see the value with whatever beef they're buying and are willing to pay that premium price, if you will, to drive demand. One of the questions we ask is, overall, what are your perceptions of beef? It's a 5-point scale, top two box positive, then there's a neutral, and then there's some negative. And you know what? You're always going to have critics. There are some folks that aren't as in love with beef as a lot of most folks are. But we see here we're about 70% positive, and we know we don't live in a vacuum. So we ask folks about chicken. We ask about pork. We want to say, how do we stack up in these areas? And what we see here, that chicken is considered a little more positively, and we don't stop there. It's like, well, why is that, and what do we need to be doing about it to flip that? So we ask a lot of questions about attributes. First, we ask consumers, when you're thinking about what to have for dinner tonight, what are those things that you're considering? What are the biggest considerations that you take into account? And it's things, probably no surprise, it's got to taste great. If it doesn't taste great, I'm not interested. I'm not going to buy it. It's got to be versatile. It's got to be affordable. It's got to fit my budget. You know, it could be the greatest thing in the world. If I can't afford it, again, it's a non-starter. So we ask a large number of these. It's got to be nutritious, great source of protein. But you can see the number one things up here are taste and versatility. Now, what you're looking at here, focus on the circles, because what we did then is said, okay, well, how does beef perform on those things? How does chicken perform on those things? And beef are the blue triangles, and you can see what I did is I circled those areas, because when I said, you know, chicken has a little higher positive perception, the whys for that start to reveal themselves here. You can see that when it comes to fitting my budget, the blue or the purple circle, which is chicken, they start to separate a little bit. And we know they're less expensive, but we got to focus on value. Is nutritious? Consumers tend to think that chicken is somewhat more nutritious. We know that's not the case. That, again, gives us direction as to what we should be working on. And then over here, likewise, a healthy choice. So that kind of starts to give us some insight into where do we need to focus? What do we need to be talking to consumers about to make them understand the benefits? And again, you all know this, but almost everybody eats beef. It's not like we're trying to grow from a 10% share to 50. We're way up there. Almost everybody, 90%+ penetration of beef. But what we're trying to do is eke out those next few points of value. So I'm going to flip gears here and say, okay, I told you about what they think about the product. What do they think about all of us? What do they think about production? And so we do a similar question in this study, and we ask that question about, you know, when you think about how cattle are raised for food, or when you think about how chickens are raised for food, is your general perception positive, neutral, negative? You see a little bit of difference here. The positives aren't quite so high, and the negatives are a little higher, and the neutral's pretty big. But the other takeaway here is those two pies and the percentages are almost the same. Consumers don't differentiate all that much between chicken, pork, beef. I mean, it's like they really don't, bottom line is they really don't understand what goes on out there and what you do every day. And unfortunately, a lot of the ideas they have are wrong. You know, when we do focus groups, we talk to consumers and they're like, yeah, I saw that documentary. I can't believe what they do out there. You know, they're pumping them full of this and they're doing that. And that's in a lot of their heads. So we do that kind of work, not just because it's interesting to know, but because we want to say, okay, we have to change this perception. How do we do that? And we talk to consumers about that. Do you want to be shown? You want to be told? We do a lot of farm and ranch tours. You can't take every consumer in the world out to a farm or a ranch, but you can do videos like the one you just saw that kind of shows them this is what really goes on out there. This is how you need to think about that. And the neutral, that kind of emphasizes my point that they really don't know what goes on. So again, we see that as an opportunity. I mean, we wish everybody knew it and understand it and was positive. They just don't know about it. So that's an opportunity that we say we should take advantage of. Here are some of the attributes we ask about production. And again, there's a lot of them. I was going to put them all up here, but these are the ones when it comes to production that they consider when they're thinking about what to eat for dinner. You know, are there antibiotics being used? Is it good for children? Is it raised responsibly? And what you'll notice is taste was up at almost 90%. These considerations are somewhat lower. They're not unimportant, but the bottom line is what we know is more and more people do want to know where their food comes from. But when they're at the meat case and they're deciding what to have, they're going, is it going to taste good? Can I afford it? You know, is it something I know how to prepare? Do I know what this cut is? And then down the line, it's like, I wonder if this animal was raised responsibly. I wonder if they used antibiotics. So these are things that are becoming more and more on the radar, but right now it's not at the top of their list. However, we think it's something we can certainly leverage. You know, again, to my earlier point, the fact that beef and chicken, those two pies, were very similar in terms of how people think about the production methods, they don't know enough to know what they don't know. I guess I'd put it that way. And that's why when they say, well, how does beef and chicken perform on all these, they're kind of right there on top of each other because they can't really distinguish. I mean, they're not knowledgeable enough to know, well, I know beef does this and chicken does that, and I can make a differentiation. They can't. So that leads us to really want to be able to communicate and let them know what's going on. So this is some work that we did. You know, we did some focus groups, and we just, you know, asked some very simple questions. And the moderator, Megan kind of described the focus groups. We're sitting behind the glass watching this, and the moderator's there, and she goes, calf in the pasture, steak on the plate. What happens in between? And it was like, you know, they all kind of looked at each other and looked around. It's like, they didn't know. And again, that was one of those things that, okay, well, that's an opportunity. And those that think they know really don't know the right thing. We did ask a question in a follow-up to that study because we were curious. It's like, you know, we hear people talk about, you know, I know they're just, cattle aren't treated well, they're held, they're in pens their whole lives. I said, let's find out what percent really think that. So we had like three things. You know, the one, they eat grass their whole life. Two, they're, you know, eat grass and finished on grain. Three, they're confined for their entire lives. 43% of consumers believed that cattle live in confinement their entire life. And we know that's not true. And that's why, you know, when you saw that video, we used drones to kind of show up high where cattle have a lot of room to move. Sometimes when they're all together, they're at the feed bunk, or they're herd animals. They kind of like to herd up sometimes. So, again, trying to dispel some of those myths. So we wanted to also find out, you know, beef quality assurance program. That has been, you know, it's a very positive program, but it's very producer-facing. It's out there working with all of you to talk about, you know, how things should be done, guidelines, that kind of thing. But we thought, you know, is there something here that might be more consumer-facing? What if consumers knew that there was this program, this quality program that a lot of folks are using out there that are intended to result in high-quality beef? So we started going down that avenue, and you know what? It was really positive. I mean, a lot of the consumers were like, just knowing that there's something like that, that makes a difference to me. I like that, and I didn't know that kind of thing. Some of the responses we got when we just introduced the notion, we didn't get into a lot of the details yet. It's like some of my concerns are no longer an issue. Some, you know, said the information, I don't really need the details. It doesn't really have an impact. Just knowing it exists is a positive. Others, it's like, you know, it just raises more questions for me. I want to know more. So we asked about knowing about the BQA, does it add a layer of confidence? And it does. It provides a quality standard for the industry, increases confidence, is credible, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So we didn't know what we would learn when we went and did this work, but we started hearing this and we thought, maybe there's something to actually making this more of a consumer-facing program. I mean, obviously, continue doing all the good work that's taking place, you know, out in the farms and ranches, but could this be one of those additional leverage points that adds to the value proposition for consumers, gives them a reason, you know, one more reason not potentially to choose beef, because if they have questions about, for example, animal welfare, this would tell them that it's something that is being taken care of. What would you like to know? You know, this big nothing in here about the details, what that told us is a lot of folks just knowing, again, the program existed was enough for them. than others were like, you know, I'd like to know a little bit more about how broad is it, what are the guidelines, is it audited, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I want to know how the cattle feed and how they are treated before they are killed for food, you know, consumers' words. Is it a requirement for farmers to follow the guidelines? So, again, we sit and listen and gather data, and it just helps inform us as to how we should be potentially talking about this one particular project. So, you know, next steps here, we want to, some of the things we learned is like be balanced, you know, just make it informative, show me, don't tell me, those kinds of things. So we're at this point just kind of working on some things we'll want to test with consumers and see, is this an opportunity to, you know, give consumers one more reason to choose beef. So I'm going to switch gears again, talk to you about meat substitutes. You know, again, this was something, you know, it's for several years. I mean, there's always been the Boca burgers, and, you know, when people think about protein substitutes, you think, you know, soy, those kinds of things. But recently, Impossible Burger, Beyond Burger, those are the brands that have really been getting a lot of press, and they have deep pockets, and they're doing a lot of marketing. So we said, you know, we need to understand this a little better. So what we were able to do is we purchase a lot of data. We purchase scanner data from the retail side. Every time a product scan, that goes into a giant database. We purchased so we know what's going on with beef in our competition, and in this case, meat substitutes. So we did that analysis, and then we also worked with a company called Technomics on the food service side and did a special study to say how prevalent is this now in restaurants and food service establishments, just so we could have a benchmark and say how big is it now, and we'll continue to keep an eye on it and see if and how it's going to grow. Bottom line is you see those tiny little slivers. You know, overall, for all animal proteins, it's about 0.1%. When you compare it to all beef, beef substitutes represent about a half a percentage point. And, you know, and again, that's important to know. Because when you think about it, you see all the press, it's like, oh, my God, is anybody eating beef anymore? Or what's going to happen? Is it going to take over? It's like, this is where they are right now. I can't tell the future. I don't know how it might grow. You know, you see a story every, it seems like every week about somebody just put it on a menu or they did this or they did that. It will be interesting to see how that transpires, but rest assured we're keeping an eye on it. And one of the things we learned in focus groups when we talk to folks and we inject in a message, for example, a meat substitute as a comparison to us, they don't really embrace that. It's almost a negative. It's like, well, why are you worrying about them? I mean, you know, so to us the message is, tout what you're best at. Tout your protein benefits. Tout your taste advantage. You know, tout all the reasons why. You know, and don't really get into this tit-for-tat type of approach. Because we know, as another study we did, we wanted to measure what consumers think are the best sources of protein. And again, we gave them 20 choices. I picked the far left three and the far right three, and there were a whole bunch in the middle. But this is what tells the story. We asked them to pick their top three, and you can see how much beef landed in the top three. We did it in 2017. We did it in 2018. We're about to do it again in about a month, you know, about the same time of year, just to see how is this progressing. And, you know, you can see beef, eggs was way up high, chicken relatively high. But on the far right, you've got crickets, you know, cricket powder. You guys use that every day, I'm sure. Plant-based proteins or things like Impossible or Beyond, and then the lab-grown. I don't know, that's not on the market yet, but people hear about it, they know about it, but we wanted to get a sense of, do they think those things is like a replacement? Is that really a good source of protein? The answer right now, and I imagine for the foreseeable future, is no. They don't see those as good sources of protein. You know, another thing that we looked at some of those earlier attributes. And we looked at, you know, meat substitutes, which are the yellow bars, and beef, which are the blue bars. And let's see how they stack up against us in some of those important attributes that consumers pay attention to when they're deciding what to have for dinner. And you can see those blue bars are a lot higher than the yellow bars. And basically, when we saw that, it's like, okay, we can't rest on our laurels, but it's good to know where we stand relative to some of these products, even though they're a tiny sliver of the market. But they think, you know, beef, a lot better source of protein. I just showed you that data. It's easier to prepare. We think it's more nutritious. It's safer to eat, et cetera, et cetera. So that was kind of a whirlwind. I threw a lot at you. What I wanted to do now, and I think if the volumes is about what it was for that first one, you'd probably be able to hear these. And I want to show you some of the outcomes of the work that we do. You know, we do all this work for a reason. We want to understand how best to talk to consumers. What should we talk to them about? What resonates with them? What makes them? Because we when we test these, we always want to see what kind of lift do we get in their preference for beef, in their likelihood to purchase beef. Because if it doesn't do that, you know, again, it's not a good use of resources. So let me just show you a couple, what I think you'll like, a couple commercials here that we have developed. Yeah, sorry for that volume. So this is one, I don't know if you remember that nicely done, like the print ad, if you will, the banner that said, you know, you're nothing like a shake or that. This is we kind of brought that to life in video form, and it's pretty funny. Even if you can't hear it, you can kind of tell what's going on. I like that one, but we test these and we want to make sure, you know, we'll sometimes go out on a couple rounds and we'll say, you know, we need to probably tweak this a little bit because they didn't quite get what we were trying to say, and we'll do it until we get it right. Just a couple more. Have one more. All right, now this is one. I'm going to give you a little, just a kind of intro to this. We came up with this idea, and I thought, you know, people love the sound of that steak sizzling or when it's on the grill. And we thought, what if we just did a video, and that's all it was just a steak sizzling in a cast iron skillet? You know, would people, I mean, what would that do? And it was, you know, very low cost. We weren't going to go spend a bunch of money to do it because it's just a shot of a steak in a skillet. And we did that, and we were amazed at the response. I mean, we were getting hundreds of thousands of views. And this thing, we did it for 3 minutes. I mean, you know the attention span when you're watching, it's like 15 minutes, I can't, or 15 seconds, I can't wait that long. You know, this was almost 3 minutes, and thousands of people watched this. And we got calls, and I actually got a message, and it was this kid, he goes, hey, I'm 19 years old, I'm in college, and I just watched that video. It blew me away. That's the coolest thing I've ever. I mean, we're thinking, really? I mean, but really, you know, to us, it was like, that is so cool. Because you know how you love that sound when you're, you know, you're cooking that and you can't wait to eat it. So I'll just play a little bit of this. I won't play the whole thing, but, you know, almost 2 minutes in, some tongs come in and it flips. And then at the end, it says, nicely done, beef. You just made somebody watch a 3 minute video of a steak and a. I don't even know if you can. That's it. That's the video. It just does that, and because I think some of the feedback we got was the anticipation, like what's going to happen? Am I going to get to watch somebody eat this steak, or are they going to, you know, what are they going to do with it? And it seems so simple. And again, this isn't going to revolutionize beef marketing by any stretch, but it was just so interesting to us to see how positively this was embraced and. So anyway, it's kind of, you know, we may use this to do shorter clips and, you know, this whole sizzle aspect. But
it's all about drool log.
Yeah, we're working on, you know, like the Yule log at Christmas time. We've got like a nice big piece of meat that's kind of rotating over a spit, and it's sizzling, and we're calling it the drool log. Did you want to add to that? Yeah, the fake fire. I mean, it's something you could just, you know, have. You know how people have a fire on, you know, on their big screen? You kind of watch the fire around, if you don't have a fireplace, whatever. And we thought, yeah, people could put that on there and, you know, just have that playing in the background when they're having their Christmas parties or what have you. So I went through a lot of stuff. Just rest assured that, you know, every decision we make with Checkoff Resources, we make absolutely certain that it's based on sound research and that we're doing it as right as we can do. And, you know, I mentioned those targets like millennials and boomers. We actually did a pretty extensive consumer segmentation beyond that that kind of helps us dig a little deeper, get a little more efficient. And we did a lifestyle segmentation. Basically, no matter what demographic you're in, how do you live your life? Do you love to cook? Do you not like to cook? Do you love to socialize? Not so much. Are you really into health and nutrition? Not so much. And it came out into six segments that we identified, you know, family food enthusiasts, social eaters, budget basics. We, you know, you have to give them a name, right? And our agency working with us, we're able to take all that data. We talked to 2,000 consumers and all of that segmentation, and they can use it to say, you know, if we're going to do this ad, if we want to talk to, you know, we identified three segments we thought would be the best ones for us to focus on because they represented the largest share of older millennial parents. They can take that data and say, for the most part, this is where they go online. These are the kind of messages they like. This is what they're looking for, so we can get a lot more efficient on spending those resources. So just a little more insight. So that's all I have for you guys. I'd be happy to answer any questions.